This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Book of Equanimity, Case 89, Tozan's No Grass. Preface. Move, and your body's buried 10,000 feet deep. Don't move, and right there a sprout grows. You'll be fine if you quickly sweep away both of these and can cast out the in-between. Furthermore, buy straw sandals and go on a pilgrimage to realize it. The case. Master Tozan addressed the assembly saying, "It's the beginning of autumn, and at summer's end, my brothers. Some of you will go east and some west. But straight away go to a place where there's no grass for 10,000 miles. After a pause, he added, "But for such a place where there is no grass for 10,000 miles, how can you go there?" Later, Master Sekito said, "Go out the gate and there's grass." And Master Tayo later said, "Don't go out the gate and there's grass everywhere." In the verse, grass all over. You, inside and outside the gate, see for yourself. In a thicket of briars, it's easy to place your feet. In darkness, outside drawn blinds, it's hard to turn your body around. See, how many? For a time, be as an old tree with wintry skeletal branches. Be about to pursue the spring breezes. About to enter the burned out fields. So the occasion of this talk by Master Tozan is the end of a summer practice period when monks gathered together, and beginning of autumn they would disperse and go back home to. And so as they're about to leave, he tells them, "When you leave, go someplace where there is no grass." Now grass here is a metaphor we would think more of like weeds, where delusions spring up everywhere. Sometimes we get the metaphor of dust, as in dust on a mirror which needs to be polished off. But here he talks about grass or weeds or delusions springing up under your feet as soon as you take a step. And the contrast is the idea of being inside the monastery gate, where presumably for the past few months you've been practicing and clearing the ground, not letting any weeds grow, not cultivating any attachment or delusion or defilement. And that may be fine when you're inside the monastery, but what happens when you step outside? How do you go out into the world? And so there's metaphors here are about inside and outside, holding still versus moving, even like being a dead tree, completely free, you know, skeletal branches, right? Not sprouting anything whatsoever. And I think the issue for us is one that is both psychological and spiritual, in the sense that we see how we inevitably use our practice or our sitting to try to create a safe inner space of some kind of clearing, right? And almost inevitably when we sit, we think of good sittings and bad sittings, sittings where we get calm and clear and our thoughts quiet down, versus those bad sittings where we're in pain or the thoughts won't stop or our mind wanders all over the place, or where we're stuck holding on to some old feeling. And so inevitably we have a kind of picture of practice from the most basic level as a beginner, how we want our mind to be when we sit, to a more sophisticated picture of the monk in the world trying to live a life free of defilement. But at whatever stage we do this, we're creating a kind of separation, an inner and outer, some kind of barrier that we're trying to maintain. And for many traditions, and many early Buddhist traditions, the idea of a monk was to be living a life that was separate from the defilements of the world. And the precepts were designed to create a life of purity. When we, at the end of our meal, chant, "May we exist like a lotus at home in muddy water," we're playing with this question of how do we exist in the muddy water of the world? How are we going to be at home in it? There are some traditions that say more or less, may we live like a lotus in purity amid the defilement of the world, right? We want to hold ourselves apart by our practice from impurity. But this is not really the Zen way. It's not Tozan's way, what he's talking about here. What he's trying to point to is an alternative of not creating this kind of separation. If we're not going to divide our mind into the pure and the impure, into clarity and delusion, if we're not going to divide the world into the pure, good life inside the monastery gate and that world of grasses, delusions, and attachments and desires, and usually women outside the monastery gate. What does it mean to practice without those kinds of separation? See, what he's suggesting is that we have to see that everything inside and outside of our mind basically shares the same empty existence. Everything has the same impermanent, interconnected existence without any kind of intrinsic goodness or badness. There's nothing that we are intrinsically trying to hold on to, nothing that we're intrinsically trying to get rid of. If we see it as empty, as transitory, That's just a momentary phenomenon. The content is not going to be an issue for us. We can let it come and go. And this sounds sort of plausible to us at a kind of metaphysical level, but psychologically it's very, very difficult to achieve. And it's what we have to really pay attention to in a kind of psychologically minded practice. We have to look at what it is that consciously or unconsciously we try to cultivate in our sitting. What do we consciously or unconsciously try to banish or push out or make not me by our sitting? This is something we all inevitably do, and it's part of why we all inevitably come to practice. We have a secret practice of some sort like that, where we've divided our mind into the good stuff and the bad stuff, and we want practice to drive out the defilements, be a kind of spiritual weed killer, get rid of all those grasses once and for all, so that our mind will be clean and pure. The danger of that is not that it's impossible, but that it's almost possible that we can really stunt ourselves, engage in pretty severe acts of dissociation or repression or denial, and call it spirituality. We push aside more and more of who we are and think we're making a clearing. But the real practice is not about that. I meet people for whom, after years of practice, they're able to sit in what for them is a great deal of inner silence or clarity. And sometimes they're surprised when I tell them that I consider that a very superficial practice. If we come to practice with a great deal of pain or suffering, preoccupation, it can feel like a very great relief to be able to quiet our mind down. And it is, and that's a valuable place to pass through. It's like he says, for a while, be like that dead tree with barren branches. See if you can get everything to quiet down. But that's not the goal of practice. The practice is really much more about coming to terms with everything that's growing up in our mind, everything that's sprouting out there in the world.